This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Noel Lim. Let's just take a quick look at the Asian markets. How are they doing today?
Well, the Nikkei is up 1%, Hang Seng down 4.1%, Shanghai Composite down 2.3%, STI down 0.5%, FBM, KLCI down 0.7%. I think Hang Seng, the Chinese tech stocks, right, certainly took a beating yesterday.
And I think there was also some news around education institutions in the in China not being able to be for profit and not be able to raise capital. So a lot of I think big announcements yesterday. So that's a kind of a really, really red day over in Asia. In the US though, a few hours ago, a greener day for sure. The Dow and the S&P were both up 0.2%, while the Nasdaq was up 0.3%, continuing the gains we've seen over the last week or so.
And so for some insights into global markets this morning, we're speaking with Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, thanks so much for joining us today. Now, nearly 90% of S&P 500 companies reporting quarterly results beat estimates from the street. What were the factors that propelled those outperforming earnings last quarter?
Well, I think number one, the bottom-up analysts are just behind in terms of the earnings potential. And you're seeing that clearly come through in Q2. But also remember, when you look at the second quarter of this year, nominal growth in the United States, probably around 12-13% nominal growth. Look at the real GDP on Thursday, closer to 9. So good growth, you know, analysts were too cautious. And then productivity. A lot of these companies are passing on these higher prices on the consumer, so their profit margins are being protected. So it's a great backdrop for now. Who knows it's going to last in Q3, Q4, but we're seeing a very strong performance of earnings this quarter.
What is your best guess? Can this earnings momentum be sustained to the end of the year?
I think it can, until, you know, not at the level of the beats. We've seen a lot of beats, you know, companies blowing away estimates. And you're going to see kind of a reversion. You know, the analysts will catch up to how strong the economy is, how strong the guidance is. So, but even with that said, I think earnings outlook for the second half of this year still remains very constructive. It's constructive enough for me to want to own U.S. equities, for sure.
Jumping from the U.S. over to the East, let's take a look at China and Hong Kong, because their markets saw heavy selling on the back of policy changes to technology, ride-hailing, and also the education sector, Joe, falling the most since 2008. Does this change your outlook on Chinese and Hong Kong markets?
You know, it has, in the sense that, like all of Wall Street, kind of a little surprised, back-footed on what's happening with the regulatory backdrop in China, whether it's, you know, property, tech, technology, now kind of the education. So we're adopting more of a cautious approach with China. These great companies, I think it's maybe a little too early to buy them, but they're looking more and more attractive. But it's that uncertainty, regulatory uncertainty, that just keeps us very cautious here and in the near term.
So how do you go about pricing in this growing risk of changing policy direction when it comes to the Chinese market?
Well, I mean, we want to be opportunistic, and we're still very bullish on Asia technology, whether it's South Korea, Taiwan, China, Japan, parts of Malaysia, semiconductors, because, you know, technology is going to be the driver of the future, whether it's AI, gene editing, you name it. So you want to be opportunistic, but, you know, that regulatory backdrop is that kind of a wild card, and that's something that's very hard to model into earnings or any expectations. But we still believe that long term, China is a place that you want to own, for sure.
Well, I'm not sure if you can answer this, but maybe your best guess again. So the move to regulate education companies in China was rather unexpected. What other sectors might see the next crackdown? For example, healthcare?
Honestly, I don't know that specifically, but, you know, it's enough that we've seen to really throw a lot of caution owning Chinese equities. And we've had a lot of conversation with clients about, you know, do we step back in? When do we pull out? So there's a lot of interest. And you know, when I look at the Chinese economy long term, specific technology, this is a global growth leader. But that backdrop when it comes to the regulatory, you know, maybe we're not done yet. Maybe we haven't touched all the sectors. But longer term, you know, China, to me, is going to be a growth engine. Therefore, you want to own it.
When we take a look at Chinese tech stocks, though, and I mean, since its peak in February, really, they've taken quite a big hit to their valuations. In your view, at what point do these start looking, at a more attractive level, right? At what point do we start seeing a little bit of a flaw and start thinking maybe it's time to buy the very large dip here?
I mean, I don't know if we're there yet, because it's a great question, because we've got a lot of clients asking that question. So they gravitate towards U.S. companies. You know, there's a lot of optimism around the FANGs, and maybe, you know, hopefully the earnings this week will back that up. So people wanting to own tech are going into, say, South Korea, Taiwan, parts of Japan, and the U.S. companies. Some smattering of European companies. But that's a great question, and I just think if people are hungry for tech in the future related to everything AI and all the great things that are coming cloud computing, they're migrating towards kind of safer havens when it comes to knowing the regulatory backdrop amongst technology stocks.
And now, looking at the U.S., Joe, Biden's infrastructure plan failed a crucial Senate test vote last week. How crucial is this bill in securing America's global competitiveness vis-a-vis China?
I think it's very important. It's part, but it's not the whole cake. It's part of the cake, so to speak. We've got a $250 billion innovation and competitiveness bill working its way through. The infrastructure plan, at the end of the day, can be pushed through by the Democrats if they have to do that. I'll be honest with you. I mean, the $529 billion, we need probably 10 times that to fix all the potholes here, you know, even around New Jersey and Pennsylvania. So we're undershooting. You know, we're undershooting the needs of our infrastructure, bridges, AI, you know, 5G. So I'm a little disappointed, and I do think, you know, we're going to rue this day because we missed a golden opportunity to really step up and go big. This is not big. It undershoots and it undermines our global competitiveness long term.
All right. Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Joe. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, speaking to us this morning to give us some insight into what's happening in the global markets. Now, just also taking a quick look at some international stories that have caught our eye this morning. Over in China, Chinese regulators have announced some new policy measures that food delivery platforms will be required to guarantee riders' income above minimum pay, insurance, as well as a relaxation in deadlines for deliveries.
So in the past, food delivery platforms, including players like Meituan and Alibaba, have drawn severe criticism on social media for their treatments of delivery riders. Most of them are not covered by basic social and medical insurance. Same situation in Malaysia. However, investors now are really worried about the rising cost of employing riders by the platforms. I think looking at Meituan's Hong Kong listed shares slumping nearly 14% against a 4% drop in the Hang Seng Index, and this after a policy reversal also in the private education space in China. It's really signaling that the government is really now, you know, prepared to upset capital markets and investors in pursuit of wider social goals. We only just wish that they would do it in a more orderly manner, but I guess China is so huge, right? And it's really quite hard to steer the ship.
But I guess that's also the realization that, well, Wall Street needs to get, right? And essentially, anyone or outside China needs to understand that this is the way capital markets are going to work there, the whims and fancies of the government. That is, let's not forget, they are a communist government. That's always going to be the prerogative of the day, the social. It's the reverse of the US, right? It's a reverse image there, for better or for worse. And we keep hearing things like, oh, surprise. And that's why when we asked Joe about whether it's time to buy the dip in terms of US tech, Chinese tech, right? He's not even sure whether it's the bottom yet, because we don't know what the bottom is. They could change regulations again next week, yeah, for all we know, or the week after. What kind of, when you try to price governance and policy risk, how do you do it when you don't know the extent or the floor at which a government will go to? You can't.
Yeah.
It's worrisome, right? But that, again, the Chinese government has its own agenda. It's got a big domestic market, its own capital market, and it can probably live on its own for a long time, as long as people still export raw goods to it, I guess.
Yeah, so, you know, even though they may impose one fine, say, on Alibaba or Tencent, and we think it's the end of the story, no more fines, but who knows, right? There may be another fine that's coming, because some of these companies are so huge, they have so many businesses. It doesn't mean that it ends there, right? More investigations could still be taking place. But if you take a long-term view about China, this could be just a blip and maybe a cleanup is just necessary.
Yeah, it's very much a top-down system in China. So we hear effectively decrees set down by the Chinese government every once in a while. Who knows what the next one is going to hold? I mean, when it comes to these kind of policy measures to introduce protections for social delivery... delivery riders, gig workers,
social delivery. Delivery of friends, is it? Is that what it...
Listen, I wouldn't mind it's called that
the,
right
the,
now.
The telephone, it's called a telephone.
No, but that's not a replacement that's for Zoom. In-person conversations.
But you're right, Lynn. Like the kind of the policy direction there is, and when it comes to these kind of new businesses, there's really a lot of uncertainty,
evolving,
right?
It's still an evolving business landscape and ecosystem.
It's
right?
kind of like when you had the the assembly line, or when Ford Motors, you know, back in the day, the Industrial Revolution, things, new rules came into play, right? Before that, it was like a 6 or 7 day work week, 5 day work week, so a big deal back then. So all of that.
Yeah, and we did speak with Tan Zai Gan of the Asian School of Business yesterday on some of the latest social protection issues and challenges faced by gig workers. So do tune in to that conversation. If you missed it, you can find it on the BFM app as well as on the website, www.bfm.my, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.